You're listening to Naked Oceans with Sarah Castor-Perry and me, Helen Scales. This month, we're diving into the issues surrounding whale hunting. Coming up, we'll find out how researchers are using records made by whaling ships hundreds of years ago to reconstruct past climate and how it could also help us look into the future. But first, we're going to stick to the present day to take a look at the latest situation with whale hunting. Back in 1986, a major landmark in ocean conservation took place when an international moratorium on commercial whaling was introduced and catch quotas for all the great whales were set at zero, which essentially means that whales would no longer be hunted for commercial purposes. But that isn't the end of the story, and there's still a lot of research and management of whales and whale hunting going on, as I found out when I hopped on my bike a few days ago. Well, Cambridge isn't necessarily the sort of place you would associate with the oceans, but I've hopped on my bike, cycled a couple of miles outside the city centre, and I've come to meet up with a group of people who are charged with looking after the biggest animals that roam the oceans. I've come to the headquarters of the IWC, the International Whaling Commission, and it looks like I'm in the right spot. In the window there's a great big killer whale, an inflatable killer whale, not a real one, but let's see who we can find inside.
The IWC is a collection of governments that come together to conserve whale stocks and to manage whaling.
I met up with Secretary of the IWC, Simon Brockington.
It can trace its origins to back before the Second World War, but the convention that empowers the IWC was signed in 1946. And since that time, there's been really some major changes. Back in the early days, in the late 40s, there were, I believe, 15 contracting governments. All of them pursued whaling interests. And of course, as we all know, as the decades have rolled by, public attitudes towards whaling have changed, and also the attitudes of the contracting governments themselves have changed. So what we have now is a very much larger commission. The total membership now is 89 contracting governments, and there is a huge diversity of views expressed amongst those governments. A number wish to continue commercial whaling. Others wish to pursue whaling for nutritional purposes, particularly for indigenous or aboriginal communities. And many others wish to promote the conservation of whale stocks, and particularly for uses other than hunting, to support industries such as whale watching.
Joining us was Head of Science at IWC, Greg Donovan.
Originally, real whale science began primarily actually in association with the whaling industry. Whatever one thinks about that, the sample sizes are very large. And in general, quite a number of scientists took advantage of being on whaling boats to look at anatomy, that kind of thing. And indeed, some of the famous biologists such as Scoresby were actually whaling captains who got interested in biology rather than the other way around.
A major part of the IWC's work is conducting and coordinating whale research. They've found, for example, that for many whale species, numbers are recovering, thanks at least in part to the current moratorium on commercial whaling, which has been in place since the 1980s. Although there are still some populations that are in danger, and many mysteries remain. And it's that great unknown of those elusive animals that live their lives in the dark depths that poses a challenge to the IWC scientists who've taken on the task of working out what levels of whale hunting could theoretically be allowed without threatening the future of whale populations.
It's really not a good idea to experiment in the wild. That's what happened with whale populations, and that's one of the reasons they crashed. So rather than do real work, we use computer whales. And I won't tell you how many millions of whale populations we've brought to extinction in our experimental work. But effectively what we do is we simulate whale populations and we build in huge amounts of uncertainty. For example, we say, what if the environment is changing in such a way that you have increased amounts of disease, so a population might at random crash by half? We don't know it, but we have to test for that. And so what we have to do is come up with an approach which, in this uncertainty, still means that the population meets the conservation objectives, i.e. remains increasing or towards the level it's chosen, which is around about 72% of its carrying capacity or initial population size. The way the system works, and it is possible to do it, should you want to do it, is such that in the beginning, while you're learning more about the population, it's incredibly conservative. For example, if you had a population of around 10,000, at the beginning the catch limit that would be allowed would be less than 50. As the procedure learns more because you have more and more abundance estimates, then the catch limits might go up. When we do our simulations for sustainability, we're not saying this is whaling, we're saying this is all human-induced mortalities. The process that we use to allow us to determine what would be sustainable in terms of whaling also allows us for some of these other populations which are in serious trouble where the catch limit would be zero. You know that. You wouldn't allow whaling of any kind on it. But that doesn't mean that ship strikes aren't happening. It doesn't mean that bycatches in fishing gear aren't happening. From a population dynamics point of view, it doesn't matter what the motive behind the removal is. It's just a removal. If you do the right level of work and you're honest as a scientist and accept the uncertainty and you continue to monitor so you don't think we've got it right, you're always testing, then it's possible to do it. That doesn't mean you have to do it. It just means it's possible to do that.
And it's not just about the whales.
We talk about managing whales, but we're managing humans. And so we need to know a lot about whales, but we also need to know a lot about humans if you want to do something sustainably. So a key component of any kind of system is that if you set rules, that those rules are obeyed and seen to be obeyed. I mean, one of the problems we know with fisheries and with whaling in the past is that people cheat. And so for a number of years, the Commission has been looking at different ways in which you could do that. Obvious ones are relatively straightforward, at least to say, if not to do, having international independent observers on board all vessels, that kind of thing. Science can help a great deal as well, should people want to go whaling again, because the genetic side of things and individual fingerprinting means that actually you can set up a system whereby any legal whale that could be on the market is in a register. And you can actually test in a pretty rigorous way whether products on the market are legal or not. Now, we're in the fortunate position, if you like, of being able to do that with whales because any catch limits would be relatively small. In principle, you can do that with fish, but clearly if you're catching millions of fish, then the whole process is considerably more complicated. So it is possible, or it should be possible, for us to develop systems which are essentially foolproof. But that requires, a lot of money, and it requires a different part, which is the governments to decide if they do or don't want whaling to take place. And that's quite apart from the science.
Probably the most controversial aspect of the IWC's work is whether or not the moratorium on commercial whaling will be lifted. And it's an issue that stirs up debate and leads to widespread accusations that the IWC is stuck between the two entrenched camps of pro versus anti-whaling nations. Here's IWC Secretary Simon Brockington.
Certainly many observers do maintain that the IWC is somehow locked into a state of deadlock and is possibly even a powerless organisation. But I would suggest that's probably not the complete picture. And the IWC has all of the power that it had when it was formed back in 1946. The only thing that has changed is that the attitudes of the contracting governments towards whale hunting has changed. And this has certainly led to some quite deep divisions within the Commission. Now, to my mind, the IWC has responded to that really quite well. It's remained as the key organisation responsible for these matters, and each year it works with contracting governments of all viewpoints to try to understand their views and to work towards common working wherever that's possible. So, whilst it's true that divisions still remain amongst countries on the central issue of whaling, the Commission is more and more starting to look at other areas where it can come together. For example, the number of whales caught in entanglement. In other words, an accidental capture in fishing gear or ropes and buoys. And that's an area where a number of the contracting governments have been able to come together to allow the Commission to work. But with regard to the central issue of whaling, the powers are still there. The moratorium, which is a pause in whale hunting, is still in effect. And the only thing that would change that is if there was a material change in the attitudes of the contracting governments. It's something that's written into the schedule of the International Convention for the Regulation of Whaling, and that would require a three-quarters majority of contracting governments to change that decision. Now, there's nothing to suggest that that three-quarters majority is likely to be attained in the near future.
Even with the moratorium still firmly in place, there's no doubt that whaling does continue. The IWC permits a small amount of traditional whale hunting, and then there's the issue of so-called scientific whaling.
Scientific whaling is kind of the colloquial expression. Formally within the Commission, it's called special permit whaling. And over the years, there have been various uses of that, ranging from taking one or two animals for museum specimens to taking relatively large numbers. For example, the US took a relatively large number of grey whales, which was to look at issues related to population dynamics.
And it's not actually up to the IWC to decide how many whales can be caught for scientific purposes.
individual members can say yes, they do or they don't like it, and of course there's a lot of controversy about it. But in practice, we provide advice, and the member government who's issuing the permit can take that advice or can leave it. It's a bit like all of the other aspects of the whaling issue. People like it to be black and white. So you'll have one group of people saying that this is essential science and without it we won't understand anything. And you have another group of people who say this is commercial whaling in disguise. I'm not going to tell you it's one or the other because it's complicated. I think it's certainly not fair to characterize it as saying it has no scientific content. And it's, however we try and be objective scientists, it is coloured partly by your cultural and historical background in the way in which you view what's needed, what isn't needed, what's essential, what isn't essential. It makes life being a whale biologist extremely complicated, but also makes it extremely interesting.
And one way that commercial whaling continues today is by members of the IWC who choose to object to the global moratorium. And some say this is maybe something of a loophole in the convention.
I wouldn't describe it as a loophole. I think this is a provision which is certainly exists within the IWC's convention, but it's also a provision that exists in probably almost every convention. There has to be an opt-out clause because otherwise countries could never ratify it. A country cannot ratify a document that it will be bound by forever because they cannot predict the changes that will be made in the future.
I think the other point about the objection procedure is it's rarely used. I think the most obvious one at the moment is in the context of the moratorium. And in effect, that applies to Norway, who goes commercial whaling. The other country who does the same thing but with a reservation is Iceland. I think one can argue about the rights and wrongs, but primarily the fact is, under the convention, they are not breaking any rules.
Well, there's no doubt that the IWC, as well as dealing with all the issues associated with modern-day whale hunting, are also making some extraordinary discoveries in the whale world. One study involves western grey whales, an extremely endangered population. There's thought to be only around 120 of them left, and they spend a lot of time around Sakhalin Island in the North Pacific. Working with an oil company operating in the area who want to minimise their impact on the whales, a research team, including IWC scientists, decided to try and find out more about where the whales move using satellite tags.
We had all kinds of difficulties and problems and bad weather. Fortunately, on the last afternoon, after we'd managed to get some extra funds to extend the project by a week, one animal was tagged, Flex.
So Flex the whale became something of a celebrity because with his tag in tow, he went on an adventure. Instead of staying in the Western Pacific, as the researchers expected, he zipped across the north and headed down the coast of North America towards an area where a genetically distinct population of eastern grey whales hang out.
Ironically, it stopped working just literally 20 nautical miles offshore of the American expert Bruce Mate, who designed the tags and who put the tag on. It was almost like it was a homing tag.
So Flex revealed that western grey whales venture much further than was previously thought. Researchers have since checked on photo ID catalogues and found that several other whales from the western population have ventured as far as California and Mexico, which has major implications for the efforts that are being made to protect these whales. But there's still lots more to find out, and the exciting news is that a team of researchers has gone back out to tag more western grey whales, and they're in the field right now, and they're hoping to attach another 12 more tags. So we're going to keep in touch, see what they find out, and we'll let you know. You can also find out more about the IWC, international whaling, and Flex the famous whale by following links from our webpage. That's thenakedscientist.com/oceans.
Are there really plenty more fish in the sea? Find out with Naked Oceans on the web at nakedscientist.com/oceans.